if the schools try to teach creationism versus evolution, they get into hot water these days. You know, and that's a shame, I think. They should be able to balance that.
Well, they should, but I think it's important to realize there are many different brands of creation belief and also many different brands of evolutionary belief. And too often I think it gets pitted as naturalistic atheism versus young earth creationism. And those are kind of the two extremes of creation versus evolution. It's great for getting a lot of heat, but not that effective for generating much light.
You are a staunch believer in creationism. Tell me why.
Well, I am, but I take an old earth perspective. I'm convinced that it's necessary to integrate all the creation texts in the Bible, not just those in Genesis. And when you do that, look for consistency across the 66 books of the Bible, it becomes plain that the days of creation in Genesis 1 are six consecutive long periods of time, not six consecutive 24-hour periods. And therefore, there's no contradiction between what the Bible is saying about the time scale for creation and what you're getting, say, in Big Bang cosmology.
But you're not a believer in the 6,000-year-old planet Earth theory?
Not at all. I mean, I do believe that God created in six literal days, but the Hebrew word yom that's translated as day has four different literal definitions.
Yeah.
Part of the daylight hours, all the daylight hours, a 24-hour period, or a long but finite period of time. And I believe the latter is the only way to read the entire Bible literally and consistently.
Our special guest tonight, Dr. Hugh Ross, a week before Easter, of course. Tell me about hidden history, that hidden treasures in the book of Job.
Well, I wrote that book. It's my latest book because Job has more science content in it than any other book of the Bible. And even though it's the oldest book of the Bible, it's the most up-to-date in terms of predicting future scientific discoveries. And in going through all the commentaries in the book of Job, I didn't find any that were really dealing with Job in that context. So I said, since I'm a scientist and since I'm a pastor, let me take this on and write this. But it's also because of the fact that there's a new discipline of science that's been launched to explore the distinctions between human beings, birds and mammals, and the lower life forms, that there's three different categories of life, which is something the Bible has always taught. But for the first time, you've got cognitive psychologists and neuroscientists doing research on those differences.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Job. Exactly who was Job, Hugh?
Well, when you read the book of Job, you notice that the animal sacrifices are being done by the patriarchs, not by priests. And so that's good internal evidence that the content of the book of Job predates that of Moses. But I think it predates it by about 500 or 600 years,
okay,
given the geographical place names that are mentioned and the historical context of no nations yet being established. So I think Job was a patriarch that lived in the Persian Gulf area roughly at the same time that Abraham lived.
Now tell me, what were some of the things that he did that make this work, the book of Job, so special?
Well, given that it's the oldest book of the Bible, we shouldn't be surprised that it lays the foundation for creation and God as the creator. And that's what the book does, I think, very well. And in fact, it explains why Moses left so much out in the Genesis creation text. He didn't have to repeat what the people already understood. So, for example, Job says a whole lot more about the universe than the book of Genesis does. As an astronomer, that was attractive to me to kind of dig into what Job had to say. He speaks about the space-time beginning for the universe. It's the first time that the Bible addresses the continual expansion of the universe, and it says that there's something supernatural about that continual expansion. And I was surprised that in Job 38, it spoke about cosmic darkness as a real substance that had specific geographical locations. And when I went to university, I was taught that as far as darkness is concerned on a cosmological scale, it's simply the absence of light.
Right.
Now we know that there are three different kinds of cosmic darkness. All three are real stuff not just simply the absence of something and that they had specific geographical locations. We also now know that the quantity of the three different kinds of dark stuff gives us the most spectacular evidence scientifically that we have for supernatural design for the benefit of human beings. And what ranks second are the specific geographical locations of the three different kinds of cosmic darkness that we know of in the universe.
So he could have been talking about dark matter long before scientists even thought it exists.
Yeah, that's my very point. I mean, yeah. Job 38, 19, and 20, God asks the question, where does darkness reside? Can you take me to its place? Treats darkness as an actual substance with a geographical location. Instructs us that it's something that's quite significant. We now know that the dark stuff makes up 99.73% of the total density of the universe. So the stuff we look at through the telescope, the stars, galaxies, and planets, that's only 0.27%.
Hugh, can a person who is not trained scientifically pick up the Book of Job, pick up Hidden Treasures, your work, and understand what happened a long time ago?
Well, I've written 14 books now, but this latest one on Job, I think, is the easiest one to read. And I've gotten a lot of feedback from people saying that it's very easy to understand. And it's mainly because I can rest on the more technical material I've put in my previous books, and people who want that can go to those books. But in the Hidden Treasures in the Book of Job, I'm really targeting a very lay audience.
As a scientist, when you were reading these accounts, looking at it scientifically, but also looking at it spiritually, were you amazed? Were you in shock at the correlation?
Well, that takes me back to my teenage years in Canada. I mean, as growing up, I got interested in astronomy at the age of 7, and I was very serious pursuing that all the way through my growing up years. And it was when I was 16, I realized that the universe was Big Bang. And if it's a Big Bang, there's a beginning. If there's a beginning, there must be a beginner. And at that point, I began to look at the holy books of the different religions of the world to see if any of them corresponded to what I was learning about in astronomy. And most of the holy books I picked up were filled with cosmological absurdities. You know, things like we live in a reincarnating universe, or that the universe goes through cycles of only 4.32 billion years. But when I picked up the Bible, I found, number one, it had more than 10 times the content on the origin and structure of the universe than all the rest of the holy books combined. And after studying it for an hour a day for 2 years, I couldn't find a single provable error or contradiction scientifically or historically. What I found instead is that this book predicted all the fundamentals of Big Bang cosmology thousands of years before any astronomer or other scientist even had a hint that the universe had the properties of a space-time beginning with continual expansion from the beginning under constant laws of physics, where one of those laws is a predominant and pervasive law of decay, which means that the universe must get colder and colder as it gets older and older, in a highly predictable way. And, you know, the 21st century has proven the Bible, which was written thousands of years ago, indeed to have tremendous predictive power.
Are these writings, like in Job, easy for people to distinguish? Or, you know, do scientists truly have to look at it and go, oh my gosh, look at this?
Well, I think you have to piece it together. I mean, I think one reason why there's so much controversy over creation evolution is you get people taking a few verses out of the Bible in one book and then trying to integrate that with a few facts from one scientific discipline. Uh-huh. What you really need to do is integrate all the scientific disciplines with all the books of the Bible. For example, you'll find 6 different Bible authors in 11 different passages speaking about the continual expansion of the universe, even describing it as a surface phenomena for the universe. Now, I think one reason why a lot of scientists haven't picked up on this is most English translations will translate the Hebrew verb for expansion, natah, as the stretching out. So what you typically see is the stretching out of the heavens. But the verb is nata, which means the expansion of whatever is being described. And in the 11 passages, you'll find it in all three Hebrew verb forms, which means these are not simple metaphors. They're literal texts talking about a literal continual expansion of the universe that proceeds from the beginning of the universe right up through the present.